Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode is Questions of the Force. We've been doing questions for a long time, and they've always had answers, but one of these days, maybe there'll be an episode where it's just questions, and then a mysterious, ethereal whooshing noise as we ponder the answers. Hopefully that won't happen this episode. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Avsock, waiting for a rhetorical center where we just ask ourselves questions.
We simply raise the questions and then play chimes for a while. Anyway, that's not what's happening today. We got some great questions and we have some fun answers, I'm sure. As always, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend Queen's Hope by E.K. Johnston. I read this book in one long sitting and had a great time. We're going to be discussing it soon on Force Center, so if you want to get caught up, you can give it a listen by downloading a free audiobook at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. It gets you a free audiobook and it helps us out. So one more time, it's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audiobook. Ken, you finished Queen's Hope, right?
I did, not in one sitting. Yeah, that is takes some skills and patience I don't have. But I had a great time reading that book. Such a fan of that series, such a fan of Padme, the character. Can't wait to dive in.
Yeah, absolutely excited to discuss that one. But for now, we're going to discuss our questions. We got two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter and Ross Squatch. Ross Squatch says, what do you do with your physical comics after reading them? I know Ken gets a new palette monthly, and I think Joseph goes digital to make more room for his unopened box collection. Love the show, and it's been great to hear Jennifer Landa. Absolutely agree with that. It's been really great to have Jennifer back for the news show and get to hear her thoughts and just feel her great positive energy back on the show. But let's go to the question, Ken. What do you do with your comics? Are you building like a large pyramid out of comic books? What are you doing?
Ross, this question hurt. It cuts me because it reminds me of cleanup I got to do. Yeah, no, this is great. And I was just having a conversation this past weekend with a friend, and I was just like, I still go to my shop. I love supporting my shop, but I got to hold it in my hand. I've got it. Same with books, music. I've switched to digital. It's a thing. And questions like this make me, you know, maybe force some change into my life. I'll say this. So when I'm done reading the comics, I will wait, and our pals Jason Inman and Ashley Robinson run a charity drive. I don't think they were able to do it this past year, but they usually run a charity drive where they donate comics to U.S. soldiers stationed all over the world and even in our own country. It's part of like a personalized little care package to give comics to those these folks out there, because there's just, they need it. There's also a lot of nerds everywhere in the world. It was an important lesson I learned back in the day. And Jason, who had served in the military, just kind of, it's on his heart. So that's actually something I look forward to doing. And they also done work with a company called Operation Gratitude, based out of Van Nuys here in California, but they're worldwide. They do the same thing, personalized boxes to the folks serving in our military around the world. It's just a nice thing. So I'll look for that. But I got to be honest, I keep all my Star Wars ones.
Yeah.
So I currently have 6 long boxes in my garage gym, and I'm dreading the day that I'll have to move. That's it, Ross. That's the answer. Now, I just go in there. I put them in sleeves, and I stare at them and go, oh, one day I'm going to have to deal with this.
Just sleeves or also backing boards?
Oh, backing boards. Yes, you go. Oh, yes, backing boards, yes.
And do you tape them shut, or do you leave the flaps flapping on the sleeves?
Joseph, I carefully tape them and then have to rip the tape later when I want to read them again. And I don't know why I taped them. But I can't stand when you pull open a long box and there's just a bunch of flappy plastic lips just sticking up in the air looking
at you. Oh, yeah. Flapping at you. You can't finger through them too quick. No, it's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah. But imagine like that. We did that with libraries and like, you know, you see like an old European library and like each book is individually wrapped and you got to do the tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have had a long relationship with comics. They're really one of my first loves. I collected them a ton from I started when I was in third grade.
Yeah.
And stopped when I was a sophomore in college. And I still own the vast majority of those. I sold a couple of them. I have 2 short boxes of comics in Los Angeles and maybe 10 long boxes in my storage unit back in Minneapolis. And it's always fascinating because it was a time where when I was collecting like that comics were booming and people, it was just when those started to be news of like, did you know that somebody paid a lot of money for a Superman comic book? Weird. Yeah. Those news reports started happening and then the company started to manufacture that, right? Like there was a new Batman comic, like I think it was a Shadow of the Bat that had like, it was an early variant cover thing where it was just different colors and everybody bought a million of those, you know, ensuring that they would never have any value whatsoever.
Yeah.
But then the things that you can never predict, a new character, a new costume, you know, somebody years later gets a movie and then, you know, so I think that's the fascinating thing to me about physically owning them is you never know when something's going to become more valuable either financially or personally, just because of something in the comics and particularly the way Star Wars stories are told, right? Like, somebody might have just picked up Aphra number one. It's like, cool, interesting, right? But as that character grows, what's going to become to the financial or personal value in that comic book is really fascinating. Just because I went through that period in my life, I remember thinking at a pretty young age, like maybe 16, I had started taking the clothes out of my dresser and filled my dresser with comic books.
Yes.
And got some grief from other human beings about that. Of like, that's not what a dresser is for. Like at 16, I was just like, this is my life. I'm going to die alone at 89 when one of my comic stacks falls on me.
Yes.
And I have a collectible personality. I got a lot of action figures that Ross is referencing in my unopened box collection. So when I wanted to get back into Star Wars and the stories, that was the first time ever I tried digital comic books. So I'm happy to have them. But also there was that recent change where Amazon had bought Comixology, but then Amazon switched over. And I finally confirmed that my iPad is not so ancient that I can't use their app, which is janky. But it's also that like that real visceral reminder that Amazon could just say, oh, we're changing the terms of condition. You don't own any of these anymore.
Yeah.
And that it's happening across lots of things with, you know, music and books and everything that realization that, you know, yeah, no, there's no guarantee that I own those. Your taped up sleeved comics, they are yours, you know, you know, a random billionaire can't flip a button and go, you don't own those anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had that debate in my house even recently when I was pulling out DVDs for us to watch.
Right?
Why do you have these? Because you can't watch Dogma anywhere else.
Dogma is the perfect example.
and I'm with you. Going to you at 16, pulling your clothes out and putting your comic books in. You know, everyone else be damned. You want to live your life like that? That's how you can live your life.
Yeah. So, what I do with my comics, to answer Ross's question, is pray that they don't disappear from all of my devices and I can continue to have access for them. In the dream world where I have a lot more space, I think I'd pick up my favorite Star Wars runs in those collected editions. I sometimes just like reach to buy, like, I love that Lando one. That Lando run of Charles Soule's. And sometimes I reach over to just buy that and go like, wait until the shelves allow it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Good question. Yeah. Good question. Yeah. I'm going to, there's about six I have to tape up and put in boxes today. So Ross, you've inspired me.
Get on the taping, Ken. We're going to move on to our next question from Yoni. Yoni says, does the rule of two really exist? It seems to be more like rule of 2.5 and a dog. There seems always to be a master and an apprentice and a backup plan. Keep up the good work. I think Yoni means keep up the good work to us, which thank you for the compliment, but maybe he's saying that to the Sith. Good job on the rule of 2.5. Where do you go with this, Ken? What do you think about the rule of two versus the rule of 2.5 and a dog?
Yeah, this caused me to pull up the rule of two page on Wikipedia and just take a deep dive on into everything here. It just challenges. And it's a quick answer to Yoni. Yeah, it does. But the whole thing is just a lie anyways to me. It's obviously a structure to cultivate distrust, to feed one's hunger for power. And there's that old sports adage, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And I kind of feel that's built into the plan there. I just think deception is built into the business model. And it's almost like it's encouraged, not said. It's an unwritten rule. Like, all right, we're going to build power together. I'm got the power. You're going to crave it. That's how this works. And I know I'll probably kill you and replace you with another apprentice I'm secretly training, and you're going to do the same thing after you kill me. I just think that's part of the chaos of the whole plan, whether it's written there or not. I think the rule of two concept is good for the Sith, not good for the galaxy. But I understand why Darth Bane was like, hey, here's a better plan. This is how we can survive and keep it going and kind of lay low. I get all that, but yeah, and I kind of like that in terms of, as a Star Wars fan, just that these Sith just can't get it together. If they ever actually just trusted each other and worked together, it would not be good for us. So I'm glad they can't figure it out. It's just kind of fun to watch them keep pushing that boulder up the hill and having it fall back down on them.
Yeah, no, I so agree with you and the Wikipedia page for the rule of two. I love the idea of the Sith using the Force to push the boulder up, but it still comes rolling back down on them. I love the story of it, the idea that there's these armies of like-minded people in that they were all against the Jedi, in that we are in agreement. We all crave power. Hey, wait. And wiping themselves out, you know, which Lucas is really big about, like that's the destruction of the Sith. They wipe themselves out. And I love the Darth Bane story of like, okay, well, we can work with this reality and set up a cycle of destruction that ensures evolution and the continuation of the line by just having two. And I think that to me is what's so fascinating about this idea is that the attempt to dance up to the edge of breaking the rule of two is one of the points of the rule of two, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's a rule that's meant to be attempted to be broken because everything with the Sith is about domination, who is on top, and about grabbing power. And if you're all about grabbing power, at some point you're not going to go, I'm cool with sharing it with my one other buddy. You are going to want the most, right? You can't be like, I'm all about power and I love sharing it 50-50. No, if you're all about power, you're going to want to take the most. So I think I love that this is the story in Star Wars that the apprentice is supposed to prove their power by taking a shot at the master. And the master is supposed to prove their power by deflecting the shot and punishing the apprentice for it until they try again. And either the apprentice fails and they kill him and they get a new apprentice, or the apprentice succeeds, they kill the master and they become the master. It's a great, neat little package. And I love that we get to see it play out, right? That I love in particular, like there's like semantics games, right? Where like Dooku's like, well, Asajj Ventress is not my Sith apprentice. She is not Sith. She's an assassin. Like, it's just sort of like, am I a store supervisor or the store manager? I would never appoint a store manager. She's the supervisor. She has a different, benefits package. Sidious, it's okay. But obviously she's the building block and Sidious, she's building towards Dooku's grab at the reins. And Sidious is like, no, I'm not buying the assassin thing anymore. She's got to go.
She's got to go. You know? I was going to highlight that moment too, because it's just so fun. It is just the no of Star Wars. And it's great. And even with Dooku, like we talk about a lot here. I love the Revenge of the Sith moment, the horror, the look on Dooku's face when he realizes he's about to be killed, but also kind of like shocked that it turned out this way. And it's like, you're so wrapped up in your own quest for power, you just thought it would turn out different for you, I guess. It's just fascinating to me. And you thought you would eventually take over, and here it is, and darkness led you this way. And I just love that look on his face. It just speaks to him going, but I thought there was a rule of two.
It really was just like that. I thought I was so on the path to being one step ahead of him. And we'd finish the Clone Wars. The galaxy would be remade the way I want it to be. And then I'll stab him in the back, no problem. And then him realizing, no, I was always an interim apprentice, not the apprentice who would become the master. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a couple other places that it plays out is, you know, Palpatine in the Vader comics trying out replacements, you know?
Yeah.
And forcing Vader to prove himself. I think, you know, there's got to be inquisitors who are hoping for a shot, right? That even that, like, they can use the Force, they can be dark side, we'll train them, but you know, we're going to keep them under our boots. They're not supposed to take a shot unless if some inquisitor successfully took Vader out. I'm sure Palpatine would be like, great, congrats, that's the way it goes.
I love it. And I know I mentioned it before recently, but that the Lucas stuff that's in Paul Duncan's archives of Palpatine kind of really being upset, particularly at Kenobi, for getting a bum deal by getting a half Vader when I wanted. I bought full. Now I got half. Oh, I guess I'll make that work. And just always that kind of being in the back of Palpatine's head, for a lack of a better way to look at it in my brain, of just him going, damn it, that's not what I bought. I want to make sure. Oh, wait, there's a son. That's a full model. That's the newer full model. I want that. It's just fascinating to me that would work under this. But in the meantime, it's like, rule of two. Anyways, what else do I got here? It just feeds all the things that are, bad about the Sith, the power, the distrust, the greed, everything about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I think that leads up to kind of one of the biggest rule of two scenes or that would make people think this is a rule of 2.5 and a dog is Yoni's very funny turn of phrase. The scene in Empire Strikes Back, which I think was made even more pointed in the special edition versions when they're talking about, well, Luke could be, a powerful ally if he was turned. I feel like that is them dancing with each other, right? That's them playing with each other. Both they both know that when they're talking about turning Luke, I think Vader knows Palpatine will try to use Luke to replace him, Vader, and Palpatine knows Vader will try to use Luke to overthrow him, right? They're playing a little dance. They're like, he would be a powerful ally for one of or the other of us, and we both know it. But there's enough wiggle room, right? Of like, oh yeah, no, we could turn him to the dark side, and then what? He'd be an assassin, right? We appear to have shut down the Inquisitorius, but maybe he'd be a new Inquisitor, right? And like, it's just it's two people who know they're going to fight, lying to one another, and waiting for the day. And we see it play out in Return of the Jedi. That's absolutely Palpatine's plan. Like, yeah, kill your father, take his place. That's the whole deal. Yeah, like, look, you're the version. You're the version I bought before Kenobi. Screwed up, and he was in mint condition. Now he's out of the package, bent up, loose. Many of his features don't work. Yeah.
I would love a scene in a maybe a short film. My dinner with the Sith or something, where it's just two. It's the master and apprentice sitting there having a nice Sith dinner, and they're both like, "How was your day?" And then just flashes to him one of them finding the apprentice, and the other maybe the Sith apprentice trying to plot a way to kill their master. Like, I just would love kind of like, "Oh, nothing. He went to the store." Like, "Oh, what did you do today?" "Oh, just meditated on power," and just flashes to what they're both just love to see that explored.
And I think some of the stuff in the comics has been really good, including the more recent Vader run with Palpatine really trying to break Vader after Empire Strikes Back and re-break him and all that great stuff. Any other thoughts on that before we take a break?
No, it is interesting though. I will say, but you mentioned, like, especially with the Palpatine Vader stuff as it's unfolded and been explained, and not explained, but just, you know, get to see a little bit more of the story and some of the modern comics and everything. I didn't grow up with that in my head. And so I've just been fascinated by it, where I just kind of thought, all the stuff like you're talking about in Jedi, where it's like, I get what they're doing. I get the arrival of Luke changes the plans. But I just had as a kid this really naive view that they were sitting down and having a nice dinner. And I'm just glad that I look at it as it is now. It's been a fun journey with my own journey with the Rule of Two.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed a lot of the fleshing out of the Rule of Two in the storytelling, because, yeah, when Revenge of the Sith ended, I've said this before, I've had like years of like the hell that Vader imprisoned himself to, of like, he's just sitting there with Palpatine while Palpatine just chats his ear off about evil and his favorite cheeses and whatever mundane BS. And Vader's just like, yes, my master. Yes. But instead, constantly tortured. Tortured. And on that upbeat note, we are going to take a quick break.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to continue taking some questions of the Force from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Robert Meadows. Robert says, I just want to know what everyone's thoughts are on Star Wars Resistance. I think it's a fantastic show that doesn't get enough love from the fan base. Ken, where do you go with that?
Great question, thought starter, Robert. We really love Resistance here. I just straight up consider it underrated. I think that's the way I look at it. And I get why in some ways, you know, the two seasons, maybe not enough time to invest. Some of the humor comes off a little different or a little more broader, you know, a little more slipping and falling and yoinks humor at times. I get that. And it looks a little different, but it's full of fascinating characters. We could just run down a list, but Kaz, the Dolza family, Griff Halloran, Jarek Yeager, Micah Gray, one of your favorites, Kel and Ela, the refugee kids, the story of Tam. There's so much there, so much about how the First Order was allowed to grow. The Colossus kind of being this thing that's by itself, not wanting to be part of the fight in a bigger way, and a lot of what is in our past and how to deal with it or grow from it. Some of the stuff with Jarek Yeager is very serious. Very, you know, PTSD and guilt and shame, the stuff of Tam, maybe not having a place and finding it in a source and making a decision that is bad at the time. And then just, again, the refugee kids and their discussion of Kylo Ren and how he came to the village, you know, lest you forget that is an evil in the galaxy, you know, the First Order, all that fascinating stuff. And then Opeepit, the best janitor in all of Star Wars. It does have a lot. And I do hope eventually it can be revalued by the Star Wars fandom at large.
Yeah, no, I really agree with a lot of what you're saying. I really love it. I think it is undervalued, underdiscussed, but also just underseen. And I think maybe that's a part of it, is I just don't think anywhere near as many people have watched it. I think the people who grew up with the Clone Wars, that is like a defining part of Star Wars for them, right? Then the people who we know, so many people who came into Star Wars with Rebels and in some ways, like that's their entry point. And then so many ideas, characters, beats from Clone Wars and Rebels have shown up in live action and kind of been iconic and caused other people to go like, I got to go check this out. And Resistance just hasn't had any of that. So I think that's a part of the reason that it's just underseen. It literally has not been seen as much. And I think for me, some of the factors of that is the short season, you know, if you're catching up on Star Wars on Disney Plus and you're making a list, like it's not going to show up on the, you have to see it in order to be all caught up with The Mandalorian. Right. And I think also the fact that it was pitched to a younger demographic, right. There is, tonally, there is just more. Kaz does a scream and slip his way through episodes, and that's not a bad thing. It's a tone thing, and then even within that, there is, like you're saying, all these great, big, very Star Wars ideas. So I think that it would be great if more fans could go like, okay, it's kind of pitched at this younger demographic. But like all things Star Wars, it is for kids of all ages. And there are big ideas within it and some real important storytelling, I think, that does enhance the sequels ultimately.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the things that I love about it, the visuals are phenomenal. I love that style. It just, it looks gorgeous, right? Mm-hmm. I think it is, even though it is a little bit of a younger demographic sense of humor, it is legitimately funny to me. You know, the reason that I love Opeep at the Janitor is because those are just some like great reoccurring bits. Some of them are like just direct vaudeville cross the back of the flat with the rubber tree plant. Bits. It's great. Yeah. Legitimate comedy, you know?
Yep.
And then it is very, very heartfelt. It's a very sincere show, right? It is about young people trying to make connections and really taking responsibility for their choices. It's, you know, about found family, about, and I think maybe for me, the most important part of the storytelling for me is that tale of resisting the reality of war. It's sort of implied in the storytelling of The Force Awakens that the Republic as a government, just they knew that the First Order is kind of out there, but like, what, come on, they're not the Empire again, let's not be melodramatic.
Yeah.
And where a lot of that feeling comes from is characters that we get to meet in here, of characters who went through the horror of the Galactic Civil War, and they so desperately don't want it to be true that they're in denial, and that leads them to make dangerous choices and then turn around and face it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also for me, here's this angle. It now came out in 2019 and goes into 2020. That's not like deep into the Disney era past, right, where it's like 2014, 2015, but there's still sometimes that era, that thing, and maybe as adults looking at some of these shows, particularly if you're on podcasts or doing YouTube channels or whatever, where you want everything, this feeling of connection, this feeling of you want it to explain more of the overall story. And something like this comes along and you think, and remember it was advertised. It was like a group of fighter aces in this era of resistance, and like, oh, so we might get more answers. And I think it doesn't fully scratch that itch if you have that itch, but me, and I like that. And I think at the time I remember, especially in the beginning, being like, well, this isn't like a squadron fighting the First Order. This is like a planet, like a rig on a planet that has almost nothing to do. And I felt like it wasn't giving me the big picture. And at the end of the day, it's giving you all of the big picture. It's giving you all the big themes. It's just its own story.
Yeah.
And it's handling those big, I mean, everything you're talking about, the refugees alone is this real serious Star Wars discussion, and it is wrapped up with some fun. And so I think it's easier for other folks and even myself at times to overlook it. Number one, like you said, how to see it was at times a little difficult too, but just like to overlook it, cause you just don't feel it's not connected to the big picture. And it really is. This is why we talk about the themes and the emotional canon and all those kind of things at Star Wars. And this does kind of end up, I'm not just talking about the Colossus, you know, is kind of there, a blip in the Rise of Skywalker, Battle of Exegol stuff. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the themes that lead everyone in the galaxy to show up at that fight. This is where you're kind of getting that and how that process worked, I think, with the people of the galaxy.
Yeah, I really think that, to me, is a bunch of individual characters, a bunch of great found family stuff, young people choosing, what they really want to believe, some classic Star Wars stuff. But that is the thing that's most compelling about it, of is almost like you watch the Citizens Fleet arrive in Rise of Skywalker and you say, who are all those people? Who are those people who would take that risk? What would get them to the point that they would be willing to take that risk? And this is taking one, you know, mostly Kaz is our introductory character, but then a community of people who try to just hide from it. They can't hide from it and get to that point where, like, if we don't stand up, then this will be our fate forever. It's this one community's story that kind of tells the whole story of the Citizens Fleet. I will say for myself, I would have taken a little bit more force. Kylo, pops up. Mika Grey's after Sith artifacts to keep them away from dark side users. This is a total subjective thing. I think for me, I know some people really crave, like, can we have a Star Wars with no lightsabers, no force? And we absolutely can. And this is a great example of it. It's minimal in this. I would take a little bit more of that. And I almost feel like this is not going to happen. This is an utter a wish list that is not going to be fulfilled by a Star Wars Santa Claus. I almost wish they'd make a movie or a mini season taking the story up from where it left off, which is entirely satisfying the way it is a yeah. 2-season story. It's entirely satisfying, but I almost wish they'd do a little bridging story that now that Rise of Skywalker is out and done and brings Colossus to it and lets us totally completely see that story of who's on Colossus. What are they feeling? Those other fighters are there, you know, that it would be really cool. And I think would maybe make it come up to that level that Clone Wars and Rebels are at. Like, this is an essential part of the story. That's just absolute blue sky desire. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
I get you on that. The Dolza family alone is just, I want more of them. Like, I'd love to see and get some of the perspectives in the Battle of Exegol specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think another final thought on this is I know that animation is planned way, way ahead of time. And I'm sure that a part of it was a little bit of that shifting. I think it was well in development as they were like, you know what, Disney Plus.
Yeah.
You know, and if it had started just a couple of years later as a Disney Plus show, I wonder if it had been developed a little bit differently.
I don't disagree with that at all. Absolutely. And who knows? Resistance saved. Maybe that's the hashtag we need now.
Yeah, maybe 10 years from now, it will be like the Clone Wars saved panel. Any other thoughts on that before we move on to our final question?
No, and to those who are listening and haven't had the chance to take the deep dive, seek it out. Disney Plus has it. And just let it sit with you for a bit. Take it in. Go for the ride. It's a fun journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. Thank you, Robert, for giving us a reason to get excited about Star Wars Resistance again. We go to our final question from Jay. Jay says, just before their duel on Bespin, Luke ignites his blade with a quick snap while Vader's slowly emerges with an evil hiss. This is clearly done for dramatic effect, emphasizing each man's mindset leading into battle. That said, what is your in-universe kayfabe explanation for this mechanical difference? Does Vader have an intimidation adjustment knob on his hilt, controlling the speed at which his lightsaber extends for when he wants to inspire an extra layer of fear in an enemy? I love that. Anakin Vader is a tinkerer, right? So like, how fast do I want the blade to come out today? Where do you go with this, Ken?
This is great, Jay, because I call this one of my favorite little things in that fight and in Star Wars, where that's a cool moment. Both moments are cool. Just, and then it's just, as a kid, you just geek out that kind of stuff and carry that with you the rest of your Star Wars fandom. I intentionally did not look up anything, Joseph. I didn't grab one of the lightsaber books that we have. I didn't look on Legends tabs, canon tabs. I didn't want to know the answer. I just wanted to dream up what I think is the case. And I wonder if it's pressurized. So if you snap down on that button, it shoots out. But if you hold it, like when you hold your X button or something, it's going to slowly extend because you might want to have some precision. Maybe you're trying to get into a door slowly and you don't want the blade to come out all the way. And
you don't want to wake people when you ignite the blades. It's like
exactly
coming out extremely slowly.
And then the Sith, we talk about Rule of Two and all the things going on. They deal in intimidation. So I do think it acts as that. And I do think there's something to Vader just going, yeah, you ready for a fight? What about this? Like, I just love everything about this. Anyways, that's my official answer. Pressurized.
I like that. I mean, a lot of the visual dictionaries have the different like adjustment knobs for the length of the blade. And, you know, there's stuff about like they're different levels of setting. So they don't actually, you know, cut through you when you're training a youngling and all that kind of thing. I love the idea of pressurized because it really does make me feel like video game. Like, do all Sith have rumble packs on their lightsabers to really make them get into it? Shake it. Peaceful Jedi, like, we do not need any rumble packs. Thank you very much. I think for me, I always lean toward a little bit more of the magical, the spiritual than the technical in Star Wars, you know, in lightsabers, obviously. Like everything in Star Wars, they're both because they do have all these, you know, adjustment knobs and emitters and focusing things and all that. But I kind of like the idea, since we've got it a lot in modern canon, that there can be a real relationship between the Force user and the crystal, the blade, that's just Vader using the Force. You're arguing for the actual force of the pressure button. And he's like, I'm leaning in very slowly, so it comes out slowly. But I'm just like that. When he hits the button, he is like almost using the Force to hold back the energy and let it come out slowly. you end up in the same place, right? That it is.
Yes. Yeah.
That it's about, like Jay is saying, I do like that it's about the stakes, right? That Luke really thinks he's ready. He's cocky and over anxious and just lights it up and flips it up and ready to go, right? And the fact that Vader's like, okay, I'll let you do that. I'll let you show me how fast you're ready to go. And then the way that Vader ignites it very, very slowly in comparison, it really is like the, like, I am not even going to break a sweat, kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he, yeah, again, sit there using every tool in the toolbox to make you feel less than. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. it is a great visual, a great start to the battle. So interesting that we come to the same idea of
yeah,
Vader's letting it out slow on purpose, but is it a pressure button or the Force? The ancient Star Wars question.
Well, look, of the two of us, you're the only one that's built a lightsaber, Joseph. So I think the next time you're at the old workshop there at Galaxy's Edge, I think you just start, you raise your hand and be like, "What? Can I pressurize the button? Is this official?"
I would like to be able to change the ignition speeds. if you can do that, you know, there are younglings at the temple who are like having like, it takes me, I've said it, so it takes me 45 minutes to fully ignite my blade. Yeah.
It's the slowest fight in history.
Wait for it. Well, that is a great question and a great image, I think, to end this episode on. Do you have any other thoughts on that one?
No, other than it reminds me, I do need to eventually build a lightsaber, so we'll do that.
Yeah, no, I need to maybe build another one. It's such an amazing experience. This is why we love doing these episodes with the questions where, like, that's like an amazing moment in Empire Strikes Back. And I've always just enjoyed it for what it is. And I've never got to stop and like really, really think about it. That's the kind of thing that we love that comes from these questions. So thank you, Jay. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Yoni. And thank you, Ross, for those great questions. That's it, Ken.
Thank you all. Thank you all for listening here. We're the Force Center Podcast. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can also see us on Instagram and YouTube as well. Thanks for everyone who watched the live Q&A last month. We'll do another one soon. May's going to be busy, but we'll get something in there for you. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter, like Jay did, where Jay gets to ask us this question. Probably been sitting on it a while. Patreon's a place to ask those deeper questions as well as the ones we take on Twitter. Anyways, that's where you can support us directly. And you can follow me at Catnapsuck or go to my website, catnapsuck.com, for information on upcoming things I do, including big comedy show here in LA, June 4th at Doug Weston's Troubadour. Ticket link on my website. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for more comedy adventures, past, present, and future coming up soon. That's josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for lightsabers that ignite at any speed, this has been Questions of the Force.